very exciting. We go away sometimes, especially where I'm living in the wild of it. It's like living on the moon in Florida, so. It's kind of driving into Cork. I was saying it to Maeve earlier that the last time I was in Cork, the car broke down at the kind of entrance to the Jack Lynch Tunnel, and it was at 5 o'clock on a Friday evening. The car actually got taken away forever, and I got €50 for it. So I was getting a few palpitations on the way into there, going, "No, I'm gonna find my way." Glad you're okay this time. Thanks again for having me here, Paul.
Thanks for coming.
Can you hear me okay? Yeah. So the first poem is about a shopping trip to Lidl that I made a while ago. And I happened to be wearing some very yellow tracksuit bottoms, and it was kind of late at night, and I needed to get some gin to make slow gin. But I didn't, you know, it was one of those moments where you just hope you don't bump into anybody you know. So of course, I'm a teacher in the town as well, so straight away I was, "Hi teacher," and I was there going, "Oh, I've got my gin in my hand." And so this is just a little bit about, you know, the when you're in the queue in a shop and you always look at other people's stuff, that was the inspiration for this. Even though you're trying not to, you kind of are at the same time. I am everything you don't know about me. I am what you see, what you get, and what you don't get. I am not a mother, a lover, or a sister, but millions of cells made from the grandmothers who walked across mountains in noontime barefoot, fondling the land that flickers in my eyes now and then. I am a warrior name sung into songlines, storylines, bloodlines, more than what I buy and less than you assume. I could be a pinch of sun that arrests you, or the unrest of leafy trees, waiting for the wind to knock me bare and unfold the season of in between. I am everything you think you know. This is another varied theme poem, but without the yellow tracksuit bottoms. It's called Yield. You are stripping the last of the berries from the elder's purple branches, and I am watching hawthorn release a crimson transfusion across the land to hold us in the depth of light. The leaves surrender despite us. White beam, gelder, rose, elder. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. These earth to sky maps we carry from the hedgerow to the table with blackened hands and bowls of foraged faith. Me and you trying to gather what serves in the dark. Our lives a scattered asteroid between these fires. We will light in the night woods to catch all the chat between wind and leaf. Talking us through our creaks on the wheel. My struggle, your resistance, and these berries from bud to bloom reaching into the life behind the life. The yield of what was sown, the berries that answered the flower's prayer for fulfillment. So I mentioned that I live on the edge of the Burren, which is a really cool place to live. I'm still kind of getting a little bit used to it, but it's a really kind of watery place. So between sea swimming and falling in holes and all sorts of things, it's quite exciting. But there's this place called Mullock Moor. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's really quite a magical place. If you've ever been to Ayers Rock or Uluru in Australia, it's kind of like the Irish version of that, because it's really magical, and you don't see it for ages, and then you go around the corner and you're just like in this really special place. So this is about a moment there. It's just called August Mullock Moor. I am caught up with the story of fluidity. Rivers that charge through desert stones, spiraling out to the mountain navel, till I am made permeable in grey-green, water falling straight into my umbilicus, where I carry the secrets of sound, carved music from a time before I knew how ravens, how they shape all paths of wind. Here I forget that things can exist in vital blue without reason. Here I take the space to occupy this birth canal of diamond life, like water's desire to fulfill itself. So this one is another watery poem about the epic heat wave, which none of us will ever forget. I kind of live near a pier, and so we all just got really childlike during the heat wave and would cycle down to the pier in our swimsuits and then see who could dive in the furthest and all that kind of thing. So we would just see if we could kind of hit the bottom, so it's a bit about that. It's called Apnea. I was standing on the edge, ready to plunge from the pier. "See if you can reach the bottom," she said. So I sank down to see how far I could go with one breath, letting the sea stretch open and pour her sheen of silk over me, down through the layers of water where we're not supposed to live. I traced my body along the floor, and in that slow motion second, between the split of up and down, a still place to watch how everything lies in water's light. The sky, all clouds bound with the sun, travelling in shafts with the grinning tide, before life towed me back to land. Above, air calmly moved through a sea-stained silence, and I think it was here I married the sea, on Arran Pier with one breath, in the beauty we can't hold, in whatever makes us dive ourselves alive. Little while I was thinking a lot about how I didn't really grow up in a religious house at all, which was unusual being my age. So in 80s Ireland, we were told when we were young, you can believe what you want, basically. My parents said, we're agnostic, but you can, you know, if you want to do the things that everyone else does in school, that's fine, but you don't have to. So that kind of opened up this unusual world of choice for Midlands, 1980s Ireland. So it kind of got me and my brothers thinking, well, what do we believe in? And, you know, what do we like? So I always remember one day opening up press in some secret compartment and looking for sweets or something, and all these envelopes toppled out, because I don't know if this happened to you, but like sometimes the people from the church would come around and give you envelopes, and you're supposed to like put money in them and give them back. But like, I think my dad was like too shy, and he just go, oh, thank you very much. And he just like, for years, stacked up these envelopes. So that kind of became a symbol in our family of sort of the lack of, yeah, not the lack of belief, but that kind of lack of, yeah, doing what everybody else did. We just didn't do it. Anyway, so these few poems are, I suppose, kind of based on that a little bit. So this one's called Inferno, and there's a part in Dante's Inferno where I think it said, without hope we live on in desire. So I found a kind of an interesting point to start writing a poem from. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned, and long may it stay that way. Being blessed with a love of flesh, his and mine intertwined, loving layers of cash, rich cheese and ruby wine. Bless me for the times when I should have had more longing, more mistakes and more bloody messing about, in worlds bruised with cherry and chocolate swirls, which are too few and far between, Father. Bless me for the times I did not allow myself to be hoisted against the wall enough by the lover I was not supposed to have, which have incredible seasons of stolen moments with crazy kitchen dancing and singing. Bless me, Father, for without hope we live on in desire. And there's a lady called Kaylin Hoyt who, I think her dad was a preacher, but she has a poem called God Says Yes to Me. So it's a little bit about forgiving yourself for all the mistakes that you've made. So this is after her poem, and it's called Genesis. So, as I was saying earlier, I just kind of moved to this part of the burn and I bought a house, but I forgot that I was going to have to like learn about how to do DIY myself. And I found that very hard, but so anyway, this poem will explain a bit of that. After the fifth hole on the second day, the god of the drill spoke. She said it was absolutely fine about the multiple injuries to the kitchen wall. Make as many holes as you need. And when I drove in that PZ2 screw, which hit major resistance and then proceeded to cover all the extra holes with my origami fox, winking just over the biggest one, God said that was okay too. Be creative, she said, why not? And when I cursed myself for not listening to anything mechanically related in school and then called the wall stupid, she declared I should adopt an attitude of gratitude. Good that I didn't get electrocuted in the face of hardcore feminism at drill bits. She said it was okay to call that feminism too if I wanted. And when I worried about all the years of possible disasters to come, she just said, look, look, in the beginning, light was day, dark was night, and the wall between, a canvas destined for cracks. Go live your life. Few little poems about animals. Probably spend too much time on my own in the countryside. So, and animals are kind of more simple than people sometimes, aren't they? They just kind of watch and listen, and they probably have their own things going on, but they don't talk back. So, it's kind of it can be trickier sometimes, but also sometimes more straightforward. This is called "The Heart of a Horse." Free of moral dilemma or agenda, they gallop over the dried up lake without destination. They do not wait for the sun to reach earth, hovering instead over the land on pink limestone nights with elegance enough to make a human heart shatter. It must be easier to be a horse, free from fighting solitude, inhabiting a wall of steady muscle, solid gaze into yellow iris with velvet mouthfuls of silverweed. I would like to be a foal among them, legs like matchsticks, holding the body open, heart three times a human size, stretched in vulnerability above the daisies. In a dizzy mouthful of summer, we don't have to sing sonnets into stars and satellites when the whole world is witnessed in the eyes of a horse, riding into sea sounds and earth songs, all the way to meet the source, but without seeking it through disaster. Another one of my favorite creatures are hares. I just find them really magical. I mean, rabbits are lovely as well, don't get me wrong, but I just love hares. And when I lived in a different house before, I had a knee operation, so I kind of just sit on the steps and I couldn't really go anywhere. But there was a hare that used to always kind of come over. But to be honest, I just couldn't understand why he wasn't scared. But I think he might have had like maybe mixed mitosis or something, but at the time I thought, oh, this is so magical, it's so, you know, this hair is coming over to me, but maybe it wasn't special at all. But anyway, it's called Encounters with a Hare. A fighter with grace and fertility, magical helper in the unexpected moment of my early morning backyard smoke and scribbles. I know it means something when we meet. I wonder about your tunnel vision. You see me, seeing you, what you're a sign of. Will it rain and what's the right action? Before I consult the cards, you vanish, quick as a breath, over the stream and into the willow, leaving my destiny up to me. Second coffee on the second day, we meet again. Somehow I'm meddling in your world, but in the split second of my mindless thoughts and your steady grace, our rhythms mingle. In the meadow-sweetened hedgerow, I could be Alice or Artemis, and you, the trickster, reminding me I'm sometimes more and sometimes less than you. Whatever the sign, animal medicine startles me into stretching time and gratitude, this everlasting game of hide and seek. So, Ciarán was saying earlier, I did a residency in Sicily last summer, and I'd never done anything like that before. So I just it was just amazing, because I don't know if you've ever been to Sicily, but you can imagine it's just so hot and sunny, and I don't know, and just amazing food, and water was amazing, and it was just stunning. So I thought, now I'm off and I'm going to write loads of poems and everything. And when I got there, all the things that I didn't want to write about, they all started coming in really strong. And I don't know why. I think it was because I was in such a good moment or something that I was able to write about the things I don't normally write about. So I tried to go with it a little bit and just think, okay, I'll just go into this for a little while and write about it, but then go back to being in, you know, paradise with like nice cappuccinos and everything. So, so I'll read a little few bits of the things I worked on when I was there. This is called Unless. Unless you have been seared by shock, don't ask me how she died. Yes, you want to be pleasant, you want to be interested even, but you cannot know that this is the wrong question. Unless you are ready for the answer, unless you can look at me without flinching and hold a steady gaze when I talk to you about suicide, unless you've been asked to make a statement to the police 1 hour after death, don't say yes, you're very sorry for my trouble, you know what it's like. Unless you've had to think about how people learn to suicide, or had to imagine what goes through a young doctor's mind as they ask you questions no human should ever have to ask another, don't tell me you can just imagine how it feels. Unless you know how it is to be left in the dark as it crushes the light, just be quiet. I'm sorry, I know that's a bit challenging. So another piece about that. Dennis O'Driscoll had a poem, and he did it kind of in the form of looking back on a time when you don't know something that's going to happen that will change the course of everything, and it's called What I Do Not Know Is. What I do not know is that the phone will ring and ring, that it will not be her voice on the other end, that I will pound on someone else's kitchen floor and rail, that the guards will be ashamed to take a statement, that my to-do lists will be empty, that the light of trees won't touch me again for many years, that I will wear the green beads I gifted her from Africa, that I will keep searching her bedside drawers to understand, that I will wish I learned Fleur-de-Lis on the piano, that my children won't have a grandmother, because she will be scattered to the breeze in the scanner, where the wind carries all the unsaid sorries, and last days are repeated without end by hearts that must pulse on, picking up all the love pieces. Lighter note, I haven't done this in a while, but a lot in my 30s I went to West Africa training in dancing and music, but I've had a lot of injuries in the last few years, so I haven't gone there for a while now, but I just love being there, and so like a few pieces about that time, and this one is called Craving, because I suppose, you know, when you're, I remember actually I was stopping smoking cigarettes at this time, and when you love something and then you hate it at the same time, that's how I felt a little bit about when I was in Guinea. I love being there, but I hated it too. So when the plane touches down in Conakry, I smell the familiar and I taste the unknown. Red dust seducing me, Afrobeat and Nescafe, fried bananas, drums, condensed milk, the geography of my Africa. I love the feel of the sweat dripping down my back, clay sticking to my legs when I bop. I am the white oddity, speckled skin like some unusual breed of hen trying to find my own dance. I long for heat, the equator where all is equal under mangoes, to squat low with the women under the tree of seven trees, Banta Raru, reverence for the tall standing ones. I need to listen for the rhyme of you grinding flour, the syncopation of pounding maize. I need you to beat it hard so I can hear every note and know you inside out. When we are together, I want you to leave me alone. You wrap me up until I am man, and I am woman amongst women. I gulp back your songs in a long drink of honor, and I cherish the moments we meet. The relief to be with you, the desire to leave you. Like some tormented lover, I yearn, we all search for gold in the same river. Thanks for all your listening. I'm nearly finished. This is another little one about Mali, and I just remember it being it's hard to be, if you're a black person in your place or all white people, I think sometimes that must be tricky, and then it's the other way around, like it's kind of hard too. But I always remember, like at night time, nobody could kind of see that you were white, so it's always like a bit of a relief or something, like to just blend in. That's what I was reminded of when I was writing this. So, to inhale Mali is to swim with the pulse surging the Niger. Touch air suffused with red clay and honor the panache of a baobab. Here I breathe intoxicating rhythms that seek the allure of silk-veiled bandits, grooving electric guitar through desert blues. To live on this land is to notice my whiteness against ochre magnificence. To notice how I hide under a cover of stars until the night blends me into blackness, so I too can be seen as one of many. And my feet too can pound the grit of sacred earth that gathers us to sing, with ladders built between worlds where together we can share the fullness of sweet lyrics made with hibiscus and offbeat melodies. To move through the delta is to learn how to befriend the elegance of quiet sands. Where the cosmos and my life is tied to each stone, every inch of me saturated in ceremony. Boundaries blurring between spirits and the streets into the places where velvet voices in raffia roll off papaya trees and the nectar of desert wind sculpts the curve of my body to meet the sun. Where I dissolve enough to know that when it comes to the dances of death, we drop away all our masks of white and of black, knowing that what we conceal in the end is always revealed. Poems to finish about belonging, and I think everybody has something about belonging at some moment in their life, so it doesn't have to be about like where you live, it could be a totally different thing inside yourself about whatever tribe you align yourself to or whatever. So I kind of feel fascinated by that a lot, about how we kind of choose to belong or where we belong to. So little bit of my journey, I suppose, around that is just grew up in Laois, then I lived in Wicklow, Dublin, then all that time in Africa, New Zealand, and now I'm back in, I'm in the Burrens, so it's kind of it's been a bit of a weird ride. But anyway, this poem is called Homing, so it's a bit about that process. It wasn't always about the red velvet curtains and Bosch drill bits. There were more nobler notions of home in my mind. Foundations built on mulberry orchards, for instance. But when she handed me that gift, a sea stone with a perfectly sculpted hole, tied elegantly to a bundle of young feathers, I understood. To think I could have reached this point, convinced I felt everything a two-legged could feel. Remember the roots to fly, she wrote on the card. And so it took me many miles and most of my time to get here, not to these walls and windows, not to the chairs or chimney, but to arrive at belonging made by rhythm at home with its own timing. Like Raven that morning, swinging around a half moon in the daybright blue, cloudless worship of stone at the silver river, belonging to what we can't see or hear. And there is nothing more simple than this, your heart hurting in the honesty of wild things, the sky changing to steel, chanting an invocation on the impossibility of yellow flowers and a grey wall. Because at the end of the day, even with the curtains and the velvets, it's just you and that soundless winged being flying into the sun, and all we need is here. One of my earlier memories is my grandfather was called Pop, but I hardly kind of remember him, but he's one of the only grandparents that I ever met, actually. But he really had this thing about trying to get us to pray, but I think that was because our parents were so, they tried to, come on then, go and say five prayers with me. But we didn't really know what he was, I think he was just trying to connect, but we were like, no, I don't want to go and do that. But one day we did do it, so it's a bit about that. It's called Prayer Poem. My grandfather, stoic, next to the fire in the mint green kitchen. Through a cloud of sweet afton smoke, we watch the autumn cool of White's Meadow falling thick and fast in the chestnut woods outside. I watch his ploughed face, story-lined eyes searching for me through the radio purr of the long-range forecast and scattered almanacs. I am at most 6 years old and wild with life. He asks me to pray for him when he dies. Will you? I do not really understand. He is translucent and seems to shrink towards his endless tobacco ash. I have never heard of prayer. I only hear a glassy voice holding the frailty of hope and regret, equal measures of tenderness and cracking. I say yes. Absolutely yes, because he is falling and somehow I know that I'm rising to the request of the dying, though I don't know how to pray. So I wrap his life in hayfields that climb to the sun, and in the ascent see all those between the worlds of now and then, how they cling us to promises, these generations who will not be forgotten. Blue bicycle. Nothing has guided me through life like my blue bicycle, teaching me about the edge, how to fall off the map, into nettles. My 8-year-old wailed when I heard the first sound of my own cry and realised the world is not flat. Since then I've pedalled in and out of disasters, learned about the farthest reaches, fields beyond the fields, great downhills, no hands, secret hideouts within and without. We still follow midsummer across the fields, watch the clouds throw themselves over our long shadows, freewheel through winking poppies, seeds bursting, till the horizon swings around to meet us, and the revolutions of humming things remind me how everything always goes back to the beginning. I was trying to think about the fact that I keep getting this mixed up. In my, I've said it a lot of time, words without walls. I've even told people words without walls, but that's worlds without walls. But words without walls is kind of, could be an interesting title for the project as well, wouldn't it? Because words break down walls. That's where I was going in my head. But anyway, worlds without walls. I couldn't really think of many poems I had about that, but I have one that I wanted to honour that with, because it's a really special thing that the fact that there's so many people all over the world, like in February, going to share that idea of coming together and share that connection of poetry, which really does break down walls about understanding each other and everything. So this is called Holes, so it's for all the people that are sharing moments like we are. I come from the ocean. You watch wind play on water. Together, we age in this place of the ageless. Map the galaxies with hazel wands.
Follow the sorcery of sorrow, primrose, gentian rose, and track life breaking through bluestone and walls that can't keep us from each other. These tributaries run over rock, water, light, until love is tinted in lime green stone, where everything must be broken to be made whole. So thanks for having me here. Generous that you're listening, and I hope I see you again sometime. Thanks.